Time now for Heart to Heart, brought to you by Zunich Advisory Services. Here's Jackie LeBeau.
Good morning, everybody. Well, spring is finally here. I have to say that weather is finally turning for us, so that nasty long winter is behind us, and we can look forward to flowers and green grass and all kinds of wonderful things coming with this warm weather. So another wonderful thing coming this morning is my special guest who has made time in her busy, busy schedule to join us this morning. It's Gail Trauco. She's a friend of mine from our Lisa Williams certification class. And I have to tell you, her list of credentials is impressive and long, but she is so down to earth. I know you're going to love her. She's made it her life's mission to help others. And whether it's through grief mediation, hypnotherapy, angel therapy, life cycle coaching, or her powers as a psychic medium, Gail calls upon her compassion as a caregiver to aid her clients in reclaiming their lives. Raised in Foggy Bottom, North Carolina, Gail attests that angels have been on her shoulder long before coming into contact with dying patients in cancer wards. Her psychic ability and clinical expertise have uniquely enabled her to bridge the worlds of medicine and mind-body-spirit healing, thus cementing her position as one of the country's most sought-after psychic mediums and grief mediators. So, good morning, Gail.
Hey, Jackie.
So I said, I mean, your list of credentials, it's like it would take me probably, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes to go through those. It's just so impressive, Gail. You have done so much in your life.
Well, once you get to 57, you kind of have to look back and go, wow, I'm a little 50-plus fabulous. What did I do?
And I love that. I love that. And, I also love that you bring that down-homeness to everything that you do. And I think that comes from your upbringing because now you were raised by your grandparents, right, on the farm.
That's exactly right. We lived on a farm, and my great-grandfather was actually a plantation owner. So I grew up on more than 1,000 acres that was owned by my family members.
Wow. That's amazing. And so you grew up like doing all that stuff. And that's actually your first spirit experiences were with your ancestors right there on the land, were they not?
Yeah, it was. It was my great-grandfather. And I was 8. You always see spirits. By the time I was 4, I knew I was seeing other things. But you really are not able to confirm what it is. And so I went to the hog pen one day. That was my job every day before I went to school, to go feed the hogs and then the livestock out at the barn.
Uh-huh.
And there he was standing there, and I was like, dude, you are so not alive.
Did you know who it was when you saw him from pictures?
Absolutely. My family has always kept very good genealogy records, so there were photographs, and I'd heard stories, some stories about him, not in great detail. His home place is still there, and we were still farming the land that he owned.
Oh, so the building, the actual where they lived is still there.
Oh, yeah, it's still there. Somebody else lives in the house. Now it was eventually sold, but the house is still there.
Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, so he is really connected. So he's just standing there looking at you, and you're coming out. And did he teach you then about the land and the animals?
He did, and he taught me. One of the greatest things that I walked away from him was that sense of fatherhood, when you're raised with your grandparents, they were so financially busy struggling for how to feed these 5 kids that all of a sudden were dumped in their yard.
Mm-hmm.
They were busy with other things, and they certainly were a generation of the Great Depression. And so what I got from him was that father figure. The stories and the values and the, my family is certainly rooted in the Southern Baptist Church. Lots of things, how to treat people. And the greatest thing I believe that I learned from him was that sense of family, that families are forever.
Yeah. And that would be so interesting, having come there and not really having your parents and just still have that strong sense of family.
And that certainly has carried over into the way that I raise my children. And, my sisters all, we're all pretty close-knit. And so I really believe that my ability to kind of hook into that came from my interactions with my great-grandfather. You know, my grandparents were very good. They provided for us the best they could. But there was that verbal expression of things that you just didn't get in the traditional South.
Yeah. Yeah, good for them. Good for them. So you had all of that. And then as you were growing up, so you were already seeing spirit and you were recognizing that. And then you actually ended up going into nursing.
Yeah, you know, I was really lucky. I went to an awesome high school, Wake Forest Roseville High School. It's a public school, and my children have gone to public schools in the state of Georgia. And I had great teachers, and I only applied to one university when I applied to school. I didn't know you were supposed to apply to, I didn't know you were supposed to apply to 10. I made up my mind I wanted to go to the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. So I borrowed the money from my next-door neighbors. They bought me a money order, and I applied in the fall of my senior year and was accepted at UNC in Chapel Hill and actually was awarded an academic scholarship.
Wonderful. Well, see, you made up your mind that's where you were going, and so that's how it had to be.
that was it was as simple as that. You know, I have a son now that's applying to university for medical school. He's got 10 on the list.
Yeah, and you were thinking, I had one.
Yeah, and I tell them that story, you know. Of course, you get the roll their eyes at mom look, but I was just like, dude, this is the way it was.
Yeah, yeah, times were different.
But they're very different. It's very different for our kids now.
Yeah, and then you really, and then how did you go from there into oncology? Because I know you've spent a lot of time with patients who are passing in cancer wards, and I know that's played a lot into your growth as a medium as well.
You know, my first position as a nurse was in a recovery room. Then I moved into the operating room. And then, you know, many oncologists are surgical oncologists. So I met a surgical oncologist that I really admired his skills, and he needed to hire a nurse. So I went to work for him at a major academic center and was kind of where I stayed. And when I started working in oncology, that was in the days when patients were actually admitted for their chemotherapy. You know, now most chemotherapy is administered outpatient. It may be a very long day at the infusion center for patients, but patients were admitted and stayed for 2 or 3 days because of the side effects of the chemo.
Right.
We certainly have come a long way in the last 20 years with cancer treatments that are available to patients, and the clinical outcomes, you know, the prognosis is so much better because people are diagnosed earlier.
Right, right. So you've seen a major change in how cancer is treated.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's not just standard chemotherapy anymore. You know, there's lots of treatment regimens available to people and lots of clinical trials that go on that are excellent clinical medicine, you know, for new molecular entities to treat cancer. So people really have to do their homework when they get any medical diagnosis, but especially a cancer diagnosis. There are so many wonderful oncologists and cancer centers in the United States. We're very fortunate to have such good health care available to us as a nation.
Yeah, I think it's confusing for a lot of people, though. When you get diagnosis like that, it's like you're thinking, where do I turn? What do you recommend to people?
You know, it was funny. My editor and I, we just wrote a submission last week on things a cancer patient needs to know. And this took me about 15 minutes to put together for her. She laughed. You know, the first thing that you do is how was that diagnosis delivered to you? What was the face-to-face time with that physician? And how did he present that to you? If he was cold-hearted and acted like it was just another day at Walmart, you need to find another oncologist.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Healthcare is a buyer's market, and that if you read my blog post on my website, that is something that I'm constantly saying. You know, there are private practices, there are academic institutions, and it depends on what your personal preference is and, you know, geographically where you live, of what you have access to. The first thing you do after you decide whether or not you really like this oncologist is evaluate, is he in a group practice or if he is by himself, you know, who's going to cover for him when he goes on vacation, if he's on call, if you have to be admitted. What hospital does he have admission privileges to? And the physician really should recommend that you have a second opinion. And second opinions are, it is worth your weight in gold to go to a major, to ask for a referral to a major academic center like Duke University, Johns Hopkins Hospital, MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston. You could go out to UCLA in Los Angeles. You know, it depends on what part of the country you live in. Anschutz Cancer Center is located in Denver. We've got, you know, all up the East Coast. We've got University of Pittsburgh Cancer Center. To have somebody else in a pathology department look at those slides, at the teaching institutions, you not only have attending physicians, attending pathologists that review the slides, but you also have multiple fellows who are doing their fellowships in pathology. So you have multiple eyes looking at the slides to ensure that your tumor staging is correct, because the pathological staging of a tumor is what will dictate the type of chemotherapy or treatment that you are prescribed by a physician.
You know, and I'm so glad that you said that about second opinions, because I have to tell you, in our area, there's a lot of people that think getting a second opinion is insulting to the doctor.
I wouldn't worry about insulting him. This is okay. Your life.
That's what I tell him, too.
So would not worry about it.
And I think that's so true. I think people think this is your situation. This is your life. And you would think most doctors are looking forward to having a second opinion, because if they're truly looking for what's best for you, you know, they want as much help as they can and putting you on the right road.
Absolutely. And if you happen to be one of the really fortunate patients who were diagnosed initially at one of the major academic institutions, you can have a lot of faith in that physician and in the diagnosis, in the initial diagnosis itself. And you can ask him how many, it depends on what kind of cancer it is. It depends on the type of oncologist you have. If you've got leukemia, you're going to have a hematologist oncologist. If you've got lung cancer, you may very well have a specialty thoracic oncologist that deals with that thoracic area. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it depends on the type of physician. But the other thing to look for at a site where you're going to receive treatment is, do they offer clinical trials to their patients?
Yeah,
These are new and innovative medicines, phase 1 through phase 3, that have been filed with an investigational new drug application with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. So that if there's not, you know, this would be probably for a more advanced disease staged patient. Once you exhaust other treatment regimens, if your disease has progressed, what else is going to be available to you?
Right. So, and, you know, we're actually very fortunate in this area where we're located. We're within 45 minutes, an hour of Johns Hopkins.
Johns Hopkins is an amazing hospital. I've done tons of work with them over the last 20 years, and they have some outstanding physicians there. We have some wonderful hospitals in the United States.
Yeah, it's so good to hear. So it's very interesting. So the clinical trials, now, Gail, you were involved with that with your own company as well, right?
I still am.
Okay, right. So,
clinical trials, you know, I think most people, you know, as a general public, clinical trials are investigational drug. You know, we also work with, you know, pharmaceutical and biotech companies, and there are devices. But for most oncology patients, these are going to be pharmaceutical clinical trials that are, you know, the pharmaceutical companies have stringent regulatory guidelines where the trials are conducted under not only their in the country guidelines, you know, like in the United States or Canada, but globally there are regulatory guidelines for the conduct of clinical trials. And the pharmaceutical companies really try to do a wonderful job of ensuring patient safety that for people enrolled in clinical trials. So if you're at an institution that offers clinical trials, they will provide, the first thing they do is tell you just a little bit about what a study entails, you know, what it treats, if you're an appropriate candidate for them to look at for this. Then they will give you what's called an informed consent form. That's a very detailed document about the drug, about everything that will happen to you in your course if you decide to participate in the study. And what people need to know is they should never be forced to sign an informed consent form. This is your decision. It's not the doctor's decision. It's not your family's decision. It's that patient's decision. So usually they will give it to you, encourage you to take it home. You know, you call back with questions. You may call a nurse. You may call the physician by email. You need to think about it. You need to think about the side effects of the drug and if it's something that you want to do, because participating in a clinical trial is a big commitment for a patient. Patient visits are scheduled, and the clinical trial is designed for safety and efficacy in order for you to get the maximum benefit from your treatment in a clinical trial, you need to come back and have scans done at certain time points. You'll need blood work. You'll certainly receive the treatment as written in the clinical protocol. And it's important for you to know that it's a big commitment.
Yeah. I think people have to realize, you're right, they have to think carefully and realize what responsibility they're taking on.
The other thing for people to know, too, and this is just for any patient in general, is you will have more than one physician involved in your care, and all the medications that you're taking, both prescription and over-the-counter, you need to keep a record of. All our medical records in the United States are not electronically connected, so a physician that, for example, Johns Hopkins, cannot look and see the physician at MD Anderson prescribed. So you need to communicate well with all of your medical providers and make sure that they're all aware of all the medications you take, including over-the-counter medications.
Yeah, great. Well, now I'm going to remind people, too, that you do have a blog post, How to Choose the Best Doctor for You. So I'll encourage people to go to your website. We'll talk about that later. We'll make sure everybody has that so they can get some great information on that as well. So now, Gail, one of your specialties is grief. And I know that you have a book coming out later this year about treating grief without medication and diagnosing grief versus true clinical depression.
That's right. The book's called Front Porch Therapy, and it should be out. It may be first quarter 2015 when it hits the bookshelf,
okay.
Just because of my travel schedule. We actually, in the last 10 years, been following Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and Dr. David Kessler's work with grief. And Elizabeth Kubler-Ross is a physician in the United States that really pioneered the work, with documentation and in her work with hospice patients. And, you know, in my, there's five stages of grief that they identified. And in my work, I've identified two additional stages. The first one being fear. Of an initial impending loss, and then the traditional five stages that they documented, the denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And then when you're leaving a grief cycle, the healing part of it is what I've termed forgetfulness.
Forgetfulness?
Forgetfulness. The prophet Spencer W. Kimball of the Mormon Church, and I remember hearing him speak when I was at BYU back in 1976, said, that when God forgives you and you forgive yourself, that a forgetfulness would come over you. And, you know, in grief, we have so many emotions that go into that one word that when you're really healed, as healed as you're going to get probably until time goes on, a forgetfulness comes over you where you're really not dwelling on that thought every day.
I think that happens in illness as well as death as well. I have to say that. And, you know, because I know, I have multiple sclerosis, and I have to remember when I was first diagnosed, I was thinking, oh, my gosh, every single day, you know, I would think about this and think about this and think about this. And I thought I'll never just have like a regular day again. And then one day I realized I was driving to work and I wasn't thinking about it anymore.
It's the forgetfulness.
Yeah.
The experience is always there. The emotion is always there. But when you get to that forgetfulness stage, kind of pat yourself on the back because, as Larry the Cable Guy says, you can get her done.
Yeah. It's true. So do we need to take a quick break, Gil?
We can if you'd like.
Okay. Well, we'll have a quick commercial break.
She's confused.
I know, bear
with her.
And then we'll be right back with more from Gail.
Okay. You're listening to Heart, brought to you by Zunich Advisory Services. We'll be back.
Okay. We're back with Gail Tracco, and we're talking about all kinds of good stuff this morning. And, one thing I want to get into with Gail for everybody is she's really known for front porch therapy. So, Gail, tell us about how you came up with front porch therapy and what that means for everybody.
Well, when I was growing up in rural North Carolina, we spent just about every afternoon after, 5 o'clock, sitting on the front porch. And as I was looking for a name for my practice, I was, what did I do when I was growing up that I kept my sanity in this very poor family? And it was actually sitting on the front porch. And I loved to go to my aunt, used to love to go to my Aunt Nellie's house. And we'd sit on her porch in the rocking chairs. And if there was something bad going on in my life, it was my Aunt Nellie that was my therapist. So
Yeah.
And we, you know, she'd have a big gallon of sweet tea sitting either in the kitchen or, you know, in a great big bucket. She made it a gallon at a time. So we would sit on the porch and drink sweet tea. So my Aunt Nellie's house. So that was where front porch therapy came from.
I love that because it's just such, and it's the rocking chairs because you and I were talking about, because I remember growing up, my grandmother had this wonderful rocking chair right by this great window in the kitchen that looked out in the garden. I was telling Gail, I can't tell you how many hours of my childhood I spent in that rocking chair, and I just loved it. And we were saying, what is it about rocking, Gail, that really has an effect on people?
The rocking itself actually will lower the body's physiological parameters, your blood pressure, your heart rate, and it actually changes your brain waves and puts you in that meditative state without somebody, you know, people freak out. They go, oh, my God, I can't meditate. And I'm like, yes, you can. You just don't know you're doing it. Because I'm one of these people, I don't like to say I meditate. There's something awkward and hippie about it, and I'm just not going to do it. but I can sit and rock in that rocking chair. So it physiologically puts you in that state where your mind quiets itself very much like you would in a yoga class.
Mm-hmm.
So when you quiet your mind, that's when you're able to hear the other side, hear your guides, and you're able to focus on allowing your inner voice to speak to you where you can hear it.
Yeah, and so if you're doing it, so does it actually change the brain wave? So does it actually, like, maybe put you in, like, to, like, a beta or theta brain wave?
Yeah, it does. It puts you in the manifestation brain wave. So, you know, if you're big into manifesting, rocking in a rocking chair is actually going to put you in that theta brain wave where if you focus on that, it's very good at manifesting positive things in your life.
I love that.
It puts you in that. And I have a device in my office that we actually can connect to someone and follow the brain waves. And, you know, when somebody has a baby and the baby's crying, the mom sits in the rocking chair, what happens to that baby after a few minutes? Unless they're very sick, they generally quiet down.
Oh, so they're getting the rocking from that as well.
That's wild? That's exactly what it is. Same thing when you're riding a horse, the movement in the saddle.
Okay. All right. I love that. You know, I think of all the people that I know that are horse people, you know, they definitely seem more centered and they're actually very creative.
Yeah. So it's that movement, the back and forth, you know, and when you quiet your mind, and that could be any activity anybody has that they're interested in. But, you know, a rocking chair is very affordable and it's something that the average day-to-day person can do and have in your home. You can buy rocking chairs at flea markets. A lot of people will, you know, they give them away. You may see one sitting out by somebody's mailbox. Ask them if you can have it. Take it home, paint it. If it was up to me, everybody in the United States would have a rocking chair in their home.
There you go. That'll be your platform, Gail. Well, Gail Tracco for president. Everybody, a rocking chair in every home.
Yeah, that might go great with Obamacare, right?
So, I mean, they're actually putting rocking chairs in some airports now, aren't they?
There are, because, you know, I'm an airport diva. I am somewhere every week.
And yeah, you're always traveling.
I've seen them in a lot of the airports, and I thought, okay, somebody's not read my book, but they're on the same page that I'm on. And the other thing that is really a nice thing for people to use when you're in that rocking chair, and in my practice, we call it a blanket of comfort. You know, throw an afghan or something over your lap to keep your own body warm, unless it's really hot outside.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're with you as you're rocking. That's very soothing.
Isn't that interesting? I just have these pictures of, you know, what we've seen in our grandparents' homes, and you think, oh my gosh, here we are, and like we're back to the things that have always worked, you know, that our grandparents knew about and their parents before them. And, you know, we sort of put all that stuff aside because we thought modern was better. And now aren't we going back to so many things?
I hope more people are going back to so many things. I'm going to spend the next 50 years that I'm on this earth. That's my mission, is to slow it down just a little bit every day. And it doesn't have to be, you know, 15 minutes a day in a rocking chair is very therapeutic for most people. And, you know, that's going to improve your health. lowering the resting rate and your physiological parameters, that's going to do nothing but improve health conditions. Certainly, it's not a cure, but it gives you a few minutes every day to lower your heart rate, lower your blood pressure, and it's only a good thing. It's not a pill to take. It's just quiet time. It certainly lets you communicate with spirit because, you know, people have kind of, I get so tired of people having walked away from God, mm-hmm. and it allows you to get focused again and centered on the things that are important.
Yeah, well, it gives you that time, too, where you're not consumed with everything else and that, you know, you have that quiet time. And so you can take those minutes to open up and connect back to God and the angels.
It's imperative. And we're living in a country, our nation right now, it's just constant fear every time you turn on the TV. So with that fear, you know, that's part of grief. Grief is our internal emotion. And when people are mourning, and this can be mourning an event, it can be any type of loss, that's the external activity of grief, you know, going to funerals, you know, the crying, the, you know, whole like candlelight vigils, the sending flowers. That's the external expression of the emotion of grief.
But internally, of course, people are churning. And, you know, and when we talk about grief, Gail, it's not just the loss of loved ones. I mean, people go through grieving for many different things throughout a lifetime, don't they?
Absolutely. And, you know, it took me 50 years of my own life to figure that out. And I've not seen this written and documented in lots of the books. And so that's what my book is about, are the different types of grief that we experience in our lifetime. Poverty, abandonment, the loss of love, certainly financial losses. You know, I have one chapter on death, but the entire book is dedicated to identifying the different types of grief that we may experience in a lifetime and some ways to treat it. If somebody has really slipped into a true clinical depression where they're unable to get out of bed and go to work in the morning, they are uncontrollably crying 24/7, you know, you can't eat, you've got a weight loss of 5 to 10% of your body mass or weight gain of 5 to 10%, they need to seek a professional evaluation by a physician. They may well need to be treated with antidepressants or anti-anxiety medications and then, you know, work with a therapist as well.
Yeah, so there are times when you can do things on your own and be successful, and there are times, like you're saying, Gail, that you have to recognize that you need some professional help.
Right, and when you'll know when you are grieving, if you're, and I call it the you're able to get up and get a grip and go to work in the morning. So if you can't get a grip, you need to see a physician. And that may sound cold-hearted, but it's what I tell my patients. I'm like, well, can you function today? Can you get out of bed and go to work? Can you do your laundry? Are you buying groceries? Are you feeding your kids? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, well, then you're okay. You know, this will pass. If they start not sleeping at night and, like, you know, some of the other physical symptoms, and that certainly is not an inclusive list, then certainly they need to see, you know, we refer them out to a physician to see, or you find your own physician that you go to for evaluation.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you just brought those differences up because I know a lot of people are thinking, well, you know, is this depression, you know, or not, you know, and then they go back and forth on their for themselves, you know, what they should do and should they do anything. So that's a good pointers there. Like if you can't get up and do your normal stuff, you've got something that you need help with.
Absolutely. And, you know, on my website, I have an 800 number at my office and people are free to call for an initial 10-minute evaluation and there's no charge for that.
Oh, you do that, Gail? I didn't know you
absolutely.
Did that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Most of the time people will have to leave a message. Sometimes I'll put a post on my Facebook page that I'll be in the office for 2 hours, and I'll actually be the one answering the phone.
Oh.
Other than that, they can leave a message, but it's a free 10-minute consultation. And in 10 minutes, I have a couple of surveys we go through and can really help somebody identify if they are truly grieving or if they have slipped into a clinical depression.
Okay. Well, Gail, can you give us that phone number so we can have that for our listeners?
I'll have to go to my website, Jackie.
Oh, I know. You're like me. There's so many phone numbers. It's like I can't remember things and
there
I have everything programmed.
Yeah, but I'll pull it up while we're on the air here.
Because, I mean, that would be something that would be so easy for people, you know, if they're struggling with that as well. So I'm really looking forward to your book coming out because, like we said, there are so many different times of grieving. I mean, even things like people who have lost their jobs, you know, people going through separations, you know, people who have lost their animals. We had a great gal on here, Lisa Larson, a couple weeks ago, who really, we spent the hour talking about grieving for your pets because for so many, they're like their children. So there's so many times we go through that. So I'm so looking forward to seeing your book and seeing the different ways that people can identify it and then deal with it in a positive manner.
Here's the 800 number, Jackie.
Okay, wonderful.
It's 888-929-8273. And it's on the front page of the website, frontporchtherapy.com.
Okay, 888-929-8273. Okay, wonderful. For Front Porch Therapy, a free 10-minute consultation with Gail's group to see if there's some help for you for the grieving process. Wonderful. I love that. Oh, Gail, there's just so much that you do that we didn't even have time to get into, but... You know, so just real briefly, how much work are you doing as a medium these days with everything else? We've got a minute.
You know, I tell everybody I'm always a medium 24/7. Everything, when I'm in a session, you know, some clients know I'm a medium and some just think, you know, they just know I'm a therapist. I'm always listening to the other side, and very much what I do is guided by God's hand.
Yeah, wonderful. And it's so true because you have that total connection. You probably go through life, you know, 80% in theta brainwave.
I don't know if I ever slow down, Jackie. I'm lucky when I lay down at night, I do go to sleep, and I go to sleep fairly early because I get up early in the morning. But there's, you know, God certainly gives us all a gift, and he's put us here for a reason. And when we are doing what he has for us to do, then, you know, doors open. I don't have to look. I just get emails, and they're like, would you like to do this or would you like to do that? It just shows up in my inbox.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. You just draw it to you. All right, well, so we may even see you on TV. I know you told me somebody's talking to you about a show, so that would also be fun and interesting.
Yeah, I'm not sure that it's for me. These discussions have been going on since December, and they've come down to Atlanta a couple times to observe in clinic, and it's an interesting concept to take to the airwaves, and I think their final presentation to me on how they present it will be the deciding factor for me.
Yeah, well, you have so much going on, and that's can be so encompassing when you get involved in something like that. So, okay, Gail, let's tell people real quick how to find your website.
www.frontporchtherapy.com. You can find me on Facebook under Gail Trauco, and you can find me on Twitter under Gail Trauco.
Okay, and that's Gail, G-A-I-L, Trauco, T-R-A-U-C-O for everybody.
And be sure to sign up for the newsletter when you go to the website. We incorporate some of the things from the book. You get a lot of freebie therapy techniques. I throw one up on the Facebook page about once a week. And if you'll go back and look, there's one called the 7-Day Pickle Technique that's a lot of fun.
I love that.
For sorting out an idea. Yeah.
Okay, Gail. Thank you so much for being with us this morning. Good luck to you with everything.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Jackie. We appreciate it.
Okay. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Okay, this portion of the program is being brought to you by Zunic Advisory Services.
Okay, we're back, everybody. So I hope you enjoyed that with Gail Trauco. She is just such a lovely gal and, oh my gosh, so knowledgeable. So I wanted to tell everybody what's coming up. I do have special events coming up. I'm going to be participating in the Spirit Network Festival, which will be held Sunday, April 27th from 9 to 4 at the Clarion Hotel and Conference Center in the Harrisburg area. So if you're interested in coming up, there will be a lot of mediums. I'll be doing some animal communication up there as well. All kinds of vendors will be there. Doing angel readings and clothing and crystals, and it's just a fun day. So keep that on your calendar. Also, next week, My guest will be Diane Hiller, who's a psychic medium, and she also specializes in feng shui. So if you've never heard of feng shui, I think you will find this very interesting. It sort of is an ancient oriental philosophy that deals with how things are situated in your physical environment to allow more energy and better energy to come into your environment. And so she does that as well as her mediumship. And she is also a former nurse. So these nurses really seem to expand from different things once they get into nursing. So we will have her as well, and I'll be looking forward to that. I definitely find feng shui very interesting, and I've taken a couple classes in that myself. So also reminding everybody out there, if you would like to get in touch with me, if you're interested in a reading or a group reading with friends and family, you can call my office. The number is 717-968-5289. And I'm also available for phone and group readings. I do group readings in people's homes. So that's always a lot of fun. So keep in mind, also, my website is www.jackielebeau.com. That's JACQUILEBEAU.com. Lots of good information there. Okay, everybody, we'll see you next week. Looking forward to it. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
In the porch swing, listening to the light rain, beating on the tin roof, baby, just to me and you, rocking with the rhythm of the rain.
Huh?
Slide on over, baby, hold me closer, moving to and fro, just swaying like a slow freight train, rocking with the rhythm of the rain. Smell the breeze. Just me and you, rocking with the rhythm of the rain. Slide on over, baby, hold me closer, moving to and fro, just swaying like a slow freight train, rocking with the rhythm of the rain. Let the breeze.
Country music legends and the stars of the world famous Grand Ole Opry. This is real country. 1280 W.